We're hosting our first Coffee House Shots live event of 2025 on the 26th of February at the Emmanuel Centre in Westminster. Join Michael Gove, Katie Balls, Kate Andrews and very special guests Jonathan Ashworth and Robert Jenrick for a look to the year ahead. They'll be tackling such questions as, can the Chancellor reframe the budget in her first spring statement? What will Trump's first 100 days look like? And will reform cause an upset at the local elections? For tickets, go to spectator.co.uk/coffeehouselive.
Hello and welcome to Press Awards nominated Coffee House Shots, the Spectator's daily politics podcast. I'm Oscar Edmondson and I'm joined by James Heal and Isabel Hardman. Now, there's lots to talk about today, but I thought we'd start with Prime Minister's questions, the last Prime Minister's questions before recess. Isabel, did they leave it on a high?
They were not eligible for an award, unlike Coffee House Shots, and just want to underline my congratulations to you, Oscar, and the rest
of the team.
Thank
you very much. Cheers, Isabel.
But no, I think this was actually Kemi Badenoch's worst one so far, and the looks on the faces of the Tory backbenchers behind her suggested I wasn't alone in that conclusion. She's already struggling at Prime Minister's questions because she doesn't have that many topics that the Tories aren't vulnerable on. Even if she talks about immigration, it can be, well, you were the party of open borders, which is the Keir Starmer line about the Conservatives' migration legacy. Talks about the Chagos Islands, you know, we've seen already how that goes. So today she opened with what appeared to be a really fertile seam, I suppose. And it was that a family from Gaza had been given a decision in the immigration tribunals that they could come and settle here using a scheme that was designed for people from Ukraine. And she wanted to know whether Keir Starmer was going to appeal this decision. And he stands up and he says, well, I disagree with the decision of the court, and the Home Secretary is looking at the loophole that has allowed this to happen and is going to close it. Now, an agile leader would have thought that this might potentially have been the government's response and have had either another topic to move on to or a slightly different set of questions to move on to. For Badenoch, though, she has already decided that one of her grand themes at PMQs is that Keir Starmer doesn't answer the question, and decided that even though it was a rare occasion where he had answered the question, she was going to accuse him of not doing so anyway. And it just became very messy. You know, she could, I suppose, technically, and I imagine probably is, knowing Kemi Badenoch, arguing that she was technically right to say that he did not answer her narrow question of whether the government was going to appeal this. But he had provided a reasonable answer in saying, well, we're going to try and close this loophole to stop it from happening. This is our course of action. And so it ended up really with a set of exchanges where Keir Starmer ridiculed Kemi Badenoch, saying that she, you know, has scripted answers. She can't listen to the questions. She can't listen to the answers that he's giving her. She's not on top of her brief, which is obviously the most satisfying thing that a lawyer can possibly say in their whole life to somebody else. And he, you know, he made her look silly. And there were a couple of Conservative backbenchers who later in the session asked questions about the Chagos Islands and about the Attorney General, who is, you know, still a vulnerability, at least within SW1, for the government. And I think they showed Badenoch up. And I'm sort of trying to work out whether that was an intentional thing, in the sense that you've actually got people who are starting to think, well, I'm Joe No One from backwater of politics, but I could do better than this. Or it's just that you don't actually have to try that hard to be better than her. And they were just trying to basically do their job of asking a decent question. Either way, it is never a good position where you are the leader of the opposition and you are the one on the defensive and you are the one being ridiculed at Prime Minister's questions.
James, I mean, this is becoming a bit of a theme for Kemi Badenoch, isn't it? Her issues at Prime Minister's questions. How much of a problem do you think this really is for her? Because obviously there are politics fanatics like us, who eagerly anticipate Prime Minister's questions every week, but not everyone really does care about it.
Well, you look at the person who perhaps did it best over the last 30 years, William Hague. Was every week there were questions about William Hague's leadership as leader of the opposition, and every Wednesday, they would then be shut up for the next few days because he would produce another magnificent performance at PMQs. He often was against, you know, Tony Blair, and Blair sometimes, some regularly actually came out on top, but Haig always gave a good showing, and Haig was a brilliant parliamentary reformer. And of course, that's why a lot of Tories, if you read the accounts of 2000, 2001, went to that election and got absolutely whomped. And so they won one seat at that net gain. So I think John Bercow said by the year 2470 or something, Haig might have become prime minister at that rate of gain. Look, PMQs in an opposition leader's first year in office is a good way of keeping spirits up. It's a good way of holding the government to account, getting momentum behind you. It's showing you're putting in the hours. That's why these encounters are important. And as Isabel says, what you don't want is thinking anyone can do that job, because they do. They might just go for that job. I think today wasn't a great example for Kevin Badenoch. I can understand the appeal of talking about the law, but on the other hand, I think it's worth noting that clearly Keir Starmer has been preparing for these attacks for years. You know, he's spent 35 years in a legal career. He often does a lot of lawyerly barrister tricks very well, very well. You know, he will talk when Chagos comes up, for instance, about private information and the need to understand these issues, with the pause and the sort of the idea he's letting you in on a great, well, actually, no. I mean, he's just prosecuting an argument and on very weak grounds, as his Foreign Office team keep demonstrating. Stephen Doughty was the latest last night. So I do think these are important. The key thing, of course, is attention, you know, and the Conservatives have gone from being the most interesting party in British politics to the third most interesting. So that's why when the half an hour spotlight comes down, and the one thing that they have in Parliament, of course, is numbers, which Reform doesn't. The polls might tell a very different story, but for now, Keir Starmer not need to appeal as leader of the opposition, use the bully pulpit that she's got from that as lotto, and show why people on the right and floating voters are better sticking with her than they are with Nigel Farage.
And Isabel, onto assisted dying. Kim Ledbetter is having to duck suggestions that she's watering down safeguards in the bill by removing the need for a High Court judge. Can you give us the latest on the assisted dying bill?
Yeah, this change quite late in the day and denied, or at least the sort of non-denial denial that even Westminster finds hard to accept, by Kim Ledbetter's office until the very moment that she did the thing that they said wasn't going to happen, has really shaken some of the people who had given a conditional vote in favour of the assisted dying bill at second reading. You know, in that debate, you had a lot of MPs who were saying that they were voting it through at this stage, but they wanted more details on that, or they wanted to be confident at later stages that the safeguards really were as watertight as Kim Ledbetter had suggested. And she had leant very heavily on the idea that a High Court judge signing off a patient being eligible for an assisted death, that this made it, you know, one of the safest pieces of legislation in the world. Now, this then came up against the reality of the British state, which is that the courts have a massive backlog already without a whole new frontier of legal decisions that will need to be made, that will be, you know, closely followed, hotly contested, often in a way that lots of decisions in the High Court aren't. And so the Ministry of Justice had made clear to her this wasn't going to be practicable. And so Kim Ledbetter has proposed replacing the High Court judge sign-off with a panel of experts, so social workers, psychiatrists and lawyers, who would determine whether or not someone was eligible and whether they were a possible victim of coercion. And yeah, there are merits of this. Social workers, you know, I'd say probably have the most training out of a lot of public sector professionals in spotting the signs of coercion, more so than certainly medics. But it was a safeguard, the High Court's element was a safeguard that lots of MPs were relying on. And so this has left a lot of them scratching their heads. And I think actually it speaks to a wider truth. We like that phrase, don't we? But I think it really does, which is that this bill is being introduced written as though the British state is functioning, and it is coming up against the reality that in lots of areas it's not. So you've got palliative care physicians and nurses saying, we are worried that there is not going to be a free choice here because we are unable to give the care and the dignity to people at the end of their life that they both deserve, and that actually medical science has made possible but we do not have the funding and staffing to be able to enable. So people are not choosing freely on that basis. You've got people in the social care sector saying, well, actually, our sector is overwhelmed, often providing very poor quality and short amounts of care. People don't want to end up in a social care setting, so they're not making a free choice on that basis. And when you actually start to look at the constituent parts of what would constitute a free choice, you see lots and lots of different areas of state failings. And it's not just the backlogs in the High Court. It's actually things that MPs themselves spend a lot of, you know, the rest of their time when they're not discussing assisted dying, worrying about. And so even those who might in other circumstances, and I'm not suggesting just in utopian circumstances, but in a couple of decades ago where we did have public services that were maybe not on their knees in the way that they are at the moment, although social care has never really got up off its knees, it might have said, well, actually assisted dying probably is something that people can choose because they can choose between this, this and this, are saying, well, actually, I'm not sure we're functioning enough. And I'm not sure that this is the problem we need to solve first. And so we end up coming back to the question of, is this a particularly well-written bill that's been thought through? If you're making changes this late in the day, as the committee stage sort of starts to trundle towards an end, it's definitely shaken the faith of a lot of MPs who might have been minded to maintain their support at the final vote in the Commons.
Mm. And James, just finally, we've had a leaked forecast from the OBR, which perhaps will make for grim reading for the Chancellor. Can you tell us about it?
Yes, on the theme of state failure. I mean, look, this was the Bloomberg story that came out yesterday evening. It was on how the fiscal headroom that the Chancellor, Rachel Reeves, had in the last budget, how the expectation now is that the rising gilt yields have wiped out that headroom, and so she's now into the red, as it were. And this all comes ahead of March 26th, when the next OBR forecast will be published. And this afternoon, in the last half an hour, we've had the Treasury Secretary, James Bowler, saying that there's a leak inquiry going on, but that this, he can't confirm either way whether these figures were accurate or not. Now, of course, the Mandy Rice Davis argument, he would say that, wouldn't he? Because why else would they be launching a leak inquiry if it wasn't actually so serious? So we could take it from this that there is at least a working assumption that there is a good chance that she may have all her fiscal headroom wiped out when it comes to March the 26th. And that's because obviously borrowing costs have soared for the UK government. But also, as Kate Andrews writes on Coffee House for us, it's just that even if she does sort of narrowly avoid going to the red, the key pattern is of forecasts repeatedly being downgraded, of all the warning signs of the economy flashing, and of the UK heading more towards stagnation. And of course, if it is true that her headroom is gone or nearly completely gone, it just means more difficult decisions for the Labour Party on tax and spend. There's reports today in The Sun that the military chiefs have been holding by Keir Starmer. They're obviously keen to get the best return possible. I suspect that's going to be one of those constant running sores in politics. Also, it's why things like the Chagos Islands, etc., assume a bigger importance in terms of budgeting and accounting. So, yeah, another example, I think, of the big story over the spring period, which will be Rachel Reeves' do-or-die moment of March the 26th. And that's why I think, to return to full circle on this podcast, it was perhaps a little surprising maybe that Kevin Bednock didn't mention the economy at all. Given now that the Tories have returned to parity on trust in the economy, that would seem a strong argument perhaps to go on, and one of which, of course, you can judge Labour by its own metrics in office, which was, hang on a sec, you're going for growth, Rachel Reeves, but also your budget downgraded it according to the sainted OBR. So I think that is going to be something we're going to see more concerted Tory attacks on in the coming weeks.
Yeah, a lot of pressure on that spring statement. Thank you, James. Thank you, Isabel. And thank you very much for listening.